Translation. Lord Brahma said, "My dear boy Narada, being merciful to all, including me, you have asked all these questions because I have been inspired to see into the prowess of the Almighty Personality of Godhead." This is a purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Brahmaji, being so questioned by Naradaji, congratulated him, for it is usual for the devotees to become very enthusiastic whenever they are questioned concerning the Almighty Personality of Godhead. That is a sign of a pure devotee of the Lord. Such discourses on the transcendental activities of the Lord purify the atmosphere in which such discussions are held, and the devotees thus become enlivened when answering such questions. It is purifying both for the questioners and for one who answers the questions. The pure devotees are not only satisfied by knowing everything about the Lord, but are also eager to broadcast the information to others, for they want to see that the glories of the Lord are known to everyone. Thus, the devotee feels satisfied when such an opportunity is offered to him. This is the basic principle of missionary activities. Om Jnana Dimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunniditam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tata Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindabha Meshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kolpatadubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo Brahmuvacha Samyak Karunikasyedam Vatsate Vichikitsitam Yadaham Chodita Saumya Bhagavad Virya Darshane. Lord Brahma said, "My dear boy Narada, being merciful to all, including me, you have asked all these questions because I have been inspired to see into the prowess of the Almighty Personality of Godhead." There's a congratulations at the beginning. Prabhupada mentions Brahma is congratulating Narada for asking a question. And this is the mainstay of the process of devotional service, is questions and answers. In fact, I always notice that in any progressive hearing and chanting session, we come out with more questions than answers. They're very valuable. If I have questions in my pocket, so to speak, when I come out of a hearing and chanting session. It's like, I never thought of that before. And they're on the ready. Then I'm very absorbent. Wherever I go, whomever I meet, I'm listening because the questions are there. And I'm eager to hear the answers. Questions are not so easy to generate, at least good questions aren't. And therefore, the Brahma Sutras begins with the advice, or more of an admonition, that now that you've come to this human form, you have a much smarter smartphone that is the body as an apparatus, is equipped to ask a much better question, much better questions than you've been asking previously. As regards eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, which are the survival questions that apparently 99.999% of the animals ask. Apparently, some of them become equipped to ask a little more. Otherwise, why does the Lord appear in every species? And we do have Gajendra, after all. And we do have to be careful about speaking about animals, I've discovered, because people, at least in the corporate audiences where I speak, take exception to us saying anything disparaging about animals compared to humans, which I guess balances out because we say a lot of disparaging things about humans and it sort of evens the score. In any case, the culture of questioning, or the first direction we get, is to ask a good question. So where does the word come from? If you look at the etymological dictionary, which someone may do now to verify this, to make sure that I'm not making things up in this class, quest, that's the root of the word question, becomes a noun. A quest, actually, says the etymological dictionary, is a search for the Holy Grail. This is the beginning of the word quest, that you're looking for the solution to all things, the sacred source of information or some sacred power. So a question is actually meant to take us somewhere. A question mark, if you look at it, it's like a hook, and it opens for us the hearts of others. If you ask a question to someone, it's possible if you ask in the right mood, they might reveal to you what's actually in their heart, which is the essential teaching Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, tadvidi pranipatena priprashnena sevaya upadakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina. If you want to find out about me, then ask people who already know, but do it submissively, pranipat. And ask good questions. And also do some service. Because when we render service to others, then there's a natural feeling that they want to give something back in return, and their hearts open to us. Questions. In the Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, after the sages have asked their questions, then the reply comes from Suta Goswami. Munayak sada prishto ham bhavad bir lokamangalam yakrita krishna sampraste yena ma supersedati. He says, as we're hearing here, congratulations, you've asked really good questions, because the questions that you're asking here are for the welfare of all the world, and can actually, the answers to these questions can satisfy the heart. They go to the soul, your questions. And we find in the first chapter, actually, the very beginning of the most important book that we have, Questions of the Sages. They're asking of Suta Goswami some very important points for him to elucidate, especially so that others can know about the absolute truth. And there's a qualification of somebody to ask and also to reply. The sages have noted the qualification of Suta Goswami. He came after his father, who had been disqualified to answer their questions because he didn't know the ultimate conclusion of the Shastra and had disrespected Balaram when he appeared. And On the other hand, his son, Sutta, had satisfied his spiritual masters. Veta tom saumyatat sarvam tatfatat tadanugrahat bruyu snigdasishishasha guravo kuhyamaputa. They say to him, O Sutta, because you have inquired submissively from your spiritual masters, and you're a gentle soul, Saumya, same word is mentioned here, you've imbibed everything important. You know all the essence of all the shastras because of your inquiries, for asking such a good, deep questions, and also living a life in which you become qualified to receive the answers, which is the implication of the mood in which they're describing, the mood that they describe that Sutta Goswami is in. Veta tvam saumya tat sarvam. He's saumya, he's a gentle soul, and he's deeply inquisitive. It's actually amazing that if you're inquisitive, you really want to know, then if you sit in the right assembly and listen with an open mind, then everything can become known to you. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, mayasakta mana partha yogam yunjan marashaya shamshayam shamagramam yatagyasasi touch trinu. Listen carefully. So here we're treated to yet another juncture at which a very qualified person is asking an important question to a qualified person. And the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto mentions that this is the process to overcome all of the maladies of life. In the preceding verses to the verse Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jignasu Shreya Uttamam Shade Parichanishnatam Brahman Yupashamashayam, we hear from the Yogendras a list of all the difficulties of material existence. It's daunting, and we can, at least I could relate to it. There's an onslaught from the very beginning, from the time one's in the womb till the time one leaves this world, of difficulties created by our interaction with the modes of material nature. And after listing them all, the sage says, and I can't remember if it's Kavihavi Antariksha or one of the other sages, but he answers, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jignasu Shreya Uttamam Shabde Parichanishnatam Brahman Yupashramashrayam, which is, therefore, Tasmad. Therefore, go to somebody who's heavy with knowledge, Gurum Prapadyeta, and offer your submissive surrender. Jignasu Shreya Uttamam, then ask the question, what is the ultimate goal of life? Shreya Uttamam, what's the ultimate purpose? How can I get the essence of life? And then the qualification of the person who is to answer is Shabde Parishanishnatam Brahman Yupashramashrayam, which means the person is Shabde. They have taken a dip in the ocean of transcendental knowledge. They're saturated with it. Shabde Brahmachanishnatam, and they're situated in this on the spiritual platform, above the modes of material nature, because of their application of the process of Krishna consciousness. Brahman Yupashramashrayam, and it's noticeable that they're averse, or at least detached from the normal course of activities in the material world. They're on the course of apavarga. They're not interested in the material world altogether. So this is the lifestyle of those who wish to know the Supreme Absolute Truth, is to be absorbed in the mood of questioning and hearing the deep answers of those who have already realized the truth. Sanatana and Rupa Goswami were highly qualified, and still they came to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatana Goswami started with the question, who am I and why am I suffering? Although he said, I'm a great I'm known to others as a great learned scholar. I'm so foolish that I believe them. So this is the way to advance in devotional service, to be a kinshana, to feel that I don't know anything, and to ask questions from those who do. Then in the purport, Prabhupada mentions the missionary spirit that the devotees, and I'll read from the last part. The pure devotees are not only satisfied by knowing everything about the Lord, but are also eager to broadcast the information to others, for they want to see that the glories of the Lord are known to everyone. So in asking the question, devotees are also thinking about the audience. They're not only asking for themselves, and we find this again and again. For instance, in the questions between Vidura and Uddhava, Vidura asks apparently very basic questions. He could have asked much more advanced questions, Prabhupada points out, but out of a sense of karunikasya, as mentioned here, out of mercy, he's thinking of everybody else. Let's start at the beginning. Like if we have a class like this and then some brand new person walks in, then you downshift and you start talking to that person, because how are they going to get it if we don't offer it in such a way they can understand it? So devotees are always thinking in terms of, okay, the answer is going to come, but let me start at a place where others will be able to catch the meaning and apply it in their lives. This is the mood that's expressed by Brahma here, that this is very, you're being very merciful by asking this question, he says, to others and to me as well. And so the devotees are very much aware that other people need to hear the answer. In fact, when Parikshit Maharaj is asking questions from Shukadeva Goswami, we find in the first chapter of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's aware that this is not just meant for him. He says, Vasudeva kata prashna purushams trin punatihi vaktaram prachakam shro trims salilasa yata sharat. Actually, I transposed a line from another verse to end, but it's practically the same. It says, when you ask a question and hear the answer from a qualified person, there are three people who get benefited. Vasudeva kata prashna. Prashna means asking a question about Vasudev, and there's kata about Vasudev. Purushams trin, three people, punatihi, get purified. Vaktaram, prachakam shrotrims. So who are the three people? The person who asks the question, the person who answers the question, and everybody else in between who hears it. And we had a classic example of this the other day when we were out in London in
Common Garden?
COVID Gardens. We were in COVID Gardens in downtown London, and we were distributing books, and it was a rough and tumble atmosphere where somebody opened the floodgates. It was like when an ice dam breaks upstream and then all the water comes rushing down all at once, and somebody let everyone loose all at the same time. I guess it was Krishna. And they all came rushing down through this area, and devotees were everywhere asking people questions, inducing them to ask questions, and offering them these literatures that ask questions and have the answers to them. And in one of the conversations the devotees were having, some other devotees were listening to their conversation, and then they were privy to somebody walking by who had just heard the conversation also of the devotee interacting with someone else. Now, isn't that interesting? When you're able to hear, I always want to hear. In fact, if somebody purchases a book and they go sit down, I go get behind them. It's like, what are they reading? What are they taking in for the first time? And this is so valuable to hear. It's like, how are they reacting to all this? So the devotees noticed that a person had walked by, overheard the conversation that going on, and then they were interested, and one was telling the other, oh yes, they're talking about self-realization. And so you see how when there's conversations going on, even in the most crowded areas, then the soul has a propensity to hear these things. And if they hear a few words and it spills out into their ears and then goes into their heart, then it starts a process. The question is so powerful. It's like a hook. It grabs on and they start to, what do you mean self-realization? This starts a whole process, a moving. And so we're interested in changing the conversation in the world by interjecting the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam into the world so that people can ask these kinds of questions and elevate themselves. In fact, the quality of the questions people ask will determine the quality of their lives. And people nowadays are asking questions that don't bring them above the level of the modes of material nature, so they just need better questions. So we can offer those to people and have a conversation going on at a much higher level all over the world. So that's one of the reasons we go out to meet people and start a conversation. And also, I've noticed just in human interaction and communication that whoever's asking the questions is leading the conversation. Questions are powerful. If you look at any punctuation mark in any language, you'll find that the question mark stands supreme. In fact, if you get a 10-page email from somebody and they don't ask a question, you don't have to write back. But if they write one sentence and there's a question mark, if you don't write back, the next time they see you, say, "Hey, I wrote you. I asked a question." So questions actually arrest us. They pull us in. So the technique of the Bhagavatam is to get pulled into the conversation about Krishna and then to find deeper and deeper questions and continue asking. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignasa shreya uttamam. Be very inquisitive and ask these questions. And you can tell in any assembly who's actually studying. Because just like when you're learning music, if you practice a lot, you're sooner or later going to run into a place where, how do I get over this bridge here? And you're going to be dying to talk to your teacher again and say, "Teacher, I can't get over this bridge. How do I do this? I can't move from here to here. What's the next step?" And you're ready to go. If you don't practice, you meet your teacher next time. Any questions? Not really. And with our lives also, if we're loaded up, as I began the conversation, with questions by hearing, and the more we hear, the more detail we hear about the pastimes of Krishna. Oh, by the way, that's a card. I wrote a book called The Four Questions. And I didn't choose this verse today, by the way. It was thrust upon me. And so the book itself is about four questions that you can ask yourself for a better life or to become self-realized, which would make your life better anyway. So in order to churn this a little more, because there's more in the purport, and I'll have more thoughts if you have good questions, not to put any pressure on anybody, I'll take some reflections, which are easy, because that means anything you heard so far in the purport or from the monologue that you can reflect back, that you found to be interesting, stimulating, etc. Or any question you want to ask to take the conversation in a productive direction, you can ask now, and we'll just go from there and test out the process. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I like how you said that questions arrest people. And we find on like Sankirtan, if a conversation's dying, you just start asking questions. And
yeah. That's right. In fact, questions like a hook, it holds on to people. Someone asks me, "How do I stop people?" So I ask them a question. It's like a hook. Sometimes people say, "I'm in a hurry." And I say, are you in a big hurry? They go, "Yeah." And I say, "Do you want me to ask you really fast?" And if they say yes, then they'll buy a book. Because it's just an excuse, really, I'm in a hurry. Or they may be in a hurry. But if you say, "You want me to give you the 5-second version?" And they go, "Yes." And then, so being ready with questions in any circumstance is very helpful. Because questions hold on to things. They're also like a tennis racket. Jai Shri Shri Radhagokulanandi ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gauri Nitai ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Haribol. They also, if you string the question mark, you can turn it into a tennis racket. And if anybody asks you a question that you can't answer, then don't try to answer it. Answer it with another question. Are you Hindu? What do you mean by Hindu? Even the Indian government can't answer that question. And therefore, it causes people to reframe their question. If you don't like the question being asked, ask for clarification. And if you can't think of any other question, there's a generic question that you can ask that really, really helps, which is, how do you mean that? Everyone say.
How do you mean that?
How do you mean that? Say it again.
How do you mean
that? So if somebody asks you a question that you can't answer or that you don't like, or that you feel has, and you're not sure, but it might have some overtones, maybe what we call a loaded question, they're trying to take you in a certain direction, you can defend yourself by saying, how do you mean that? And that then they have to reframe the question and give you something more granular that you can deal with. So it's very helpful, as you're pointing out, in all kinds of conversations. In fact, there's a professor of York University who wrote a book called How to Win an Argument. It's a book on rhetoric, and he's a teacher of rhetoric, and he said that the biggest mistake people make in arguing or in debating is that they forget what they're arguing about. And he said, therefore, you should stop at intervals and say, what is the main topic? What are we discussing? What are we trying to establish here? What are we arguing about? And often people don't know. They just go on and on in circles. So become a master asker. Sutta Prabhu.
Thank you, Vaishesh Kapoor. I was just wondering, Prabhupada in the purport talks about missionary activity and how we're very enthusiastic to share. And when people ask us questions, I'm just wondering, could you give us some guidance on what goes on in your mind when someone asks you a question and what process you go through to give them the best answer possible for their benefit, and some of the things we should think about when we're answering people's questions, so that we can, because we see Srila Prabhupada often the same question, he may have answered it like five different ways, and obviously there's a process that he's going through. So could you share something?
Do you have any particular question in mind that you find like people asking regularly?
Like, for example, I was thinking people ask Prabhupada, can you see God, for example? And like Prabhupada had many different answers to that. Like sometimes he just said like, yeah, I can see God. Sometimes
yeah, I don't say that. but I answer that with a question. I'll say, what would you accept as evidence of, or how could you prove or disprove that I'm saying God? How is that a valuable question? Because if I say I can see God, how can you prove otherwise? And how will that be helpful? So in that particular question, I would ask another question. It takes it to a deeper level, which is, let's establish the epistemology. How do we know something? And I would take it to that level. I always try to go to the root of something, like, is this religion? And first of all, one of the answers I give for that, when people say, is this religion? And I can tell by their intonation that they might think of it in pejorative terms. So I say, this completely rejects all religious activities that are materially motivated, and it propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion, for the welfare of all. They like the first part a lot, and then the second part sort of sinks in. Are you selling this? We refuse to sell it. It's too valuable. We just take donations. Those are sort of, there's a finite number of questions that people ask, interestingly, unless they're some kind of transcendentalist, and then the questions become more refined. But those are the kinds of answers that I give that I find are useful on the spot. people because I'm understanding usually what their intention is for asking the question. At least that's my job, is to try to understand what their intention is. And if I don't know, then I'll say, you know, why do you ask? That will help me to understand and ask, how do you mean that? And it does help to refine it. Yes, Prabhu. I'm looking this side also, just in case I missed anybody's hand. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Just slightly connected to that, based on the fact that we might have enthusiasm to want to share or broadcast this knowledge, but maybe we might not have much of the depth or the deeper sense of understanding of the philosophy, but like the basics are things that we feel we should share with others and kind of broadcast to many people as much as we can. If opportunities like these come about, should, you know, because at times there's a fear of like, oh no, I'm not advanced enough to be able to share certain things, but there's an enthusiasm to want to do that. Should we, you know, not take advantage of these opportunities, or how should we think about approaching such kind of opportunities when they come to us?
Well, Malati tells how in the very beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada sent her and many other very new devotees out to teach people about how to chant Hare Krishna. They didn't have books at that time so much to distribute to people, but it was about chanting Hare Krishna. And she said when she was out there teaching people, she had to have it written on a piece of paper because she didn't even know the mantra yet. Good. Hold on, let me show you. In fact, I find oftentimes with very new people, like we'll have a seminar, and I have this little card we made called How to Sell a Bhagavad Gita on Its Own Merit at a Glance. And it's a card they can carry with them. It tells the different steps that I recommend to start with in a template before then you innovate on your own. And with brand new people, I tell them, take the card out with you and tell people, you know, I'm brand new. I just got here. It's my first day. And I wonder if you could help me out. I'm going to follow this card, and you tell me if I do okay. And I notice if people actually do that, the devotees, the neophyte does it, the people are going, oh, come on, now ask me for the donation. This is the part, yes. Sure, I'll give. And they get involved. People like it when we're straightforward and honest, and that they appreciate that somebody's sincerely trying to do something. And actually, I notice they cater more towards the simple. And it is noticeable that when new people go out and try to spread Krishna consciousness, they come into the divine energy that naturally is available through the process of spreading Krishna consciousness, teaching to others. And we find that those who start off in that way, who find out that this is the basic principle of the Krishna conscious movement, to share it with others, they become stronger in their conviction. They move up to the Madhyama Adhikari platform more quickly. In fact, one of our very stalwart devotees at our temple at ISKCON of Silicon Valley, named Ramananda Sakha Prabhu, I remember when we were all going out on Sankirtan one day, just on the way out the door, and it was his first time to the temple, and he came in and said, you know, I'm here. He is an extremely rare and sincere person. He came in saying, you know, I want to, you know, be part of the Krishna consciousness movement. And he said, okay, you can come with us. We're going on Sankirtan. He said, what's that? He said, well, come and find out. And I remember we had a book table in front of a store, and there were three of us there, including I brought Ramananda Sakha, who was name was different back then, and it was his first time ever. And two of us were engaged in showing books to others, and another couple came over and were perusing the books on the rack and had said, what's this one? And only Ramananda Sakha was there. He'd not been there, you know, he'd never seen this before. So I listened in as I was talking to somebody else. What is he going to say? So he said, yeah, I've heard this is a really good book. And then the people took it. And he had such an exhilarating experience being part of the party going out that he was edified by it. But it is important when we take new people into the preaching fields that they're under good guidance, and that also they feel a safe, protective environment. But if you know something more than others, then you can offer it, because I'm always surprised at how little people actually know about spiritual life. We may take it for granted. For instance, if you look at the changing bodies picture, do you do a double take every time you see it? Or do you think, oh yeah, it's changing bodies? Well, there's a place, before the pandemic, I used to go in every week. It's a company called Salesforce. They have their headquarters in San Francisco, and they have two or three gigantic high-rises, and the person who owns the company has a spiritual bent to him. And when I go in and talk to the corporate audiences, so many times I bring the Changing Bodies exhibit. We have one of the original ones made by Lochan Prabhu. You can tell by the antiquated clothes that the person's wearing. It's almost so old that the clothes are becoming hip again. The whole cycle has gone by. And so I walk into the lobby holding this Changing Bodies exhibit, and people are walking by, you know how they do in corporate, in a hurry, and I'd see them do a U-turn and come back, and they go, wait a minute, what is that? And then more people would come over, and they go, what is that? Is that? I say, yeah, that's what it is. And they go, oh my God. And then again on the elevator, you know, you get on the elevator and everyone's going, dum-dee-dum-dum-dum, just don't look at anybody. But then I'd be standing there with it and somebody would look over, and then everybody in the elevator would turn around and be looking at the changing bodies like, is that it? You know, and they're like, yeah, this is it. And they're, oh my God. I may take for granted the motif of changing bodies, but for new people, it's the most amazing thing they've ever seen. I saw once at Montreal, I was at the Rath Yatra, and it was a day before Rath Yatra, so we're having sort of a warm-up, and there was a large changing bodies exhibit, and I was standing at the book table nearby, and there were only a few people just walking by, because it wasn't Rath Yatra day, it was just before it, and I saw this couple who had just wandered onto the Rath Yatra field where we were set up, and they sauntered over to the Changing Bodies exhibit holding hands, and they were looking at it, and then I could see their faces, and there was kind of shocked look on their face when they got it, what it meant, and the woman said, come on, Roger, let's get out of here. And just pulled on his hand like, let's go. This is a frightening revelation to see it all in front of us. So what we think to be quite normal and ordinary to other people is a revelation that will change their lives. What to speak of just hearing Hare Krishna. So at any level, we have something to offer to society to introduce into the conversation. From this side? I'll come right back to you. Yes, Prabhu. Haribo.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Haribo. Thank you for giving us your association this morning. Prabhu, you said we're interested in changing the conversations of the world by interjecting the Srimad Bhagavatam into the world. And I'm thinking about the Bhadra campaign, and I'm thinking about how we're placing so many sets in different places. And if I'm honest, I have a doubt about the effectiveness of that. So perhaps if you could, you know, slash my doubt and help me understand the effectiveness of placing books, I'll be most grateful.
As an overall strategy for bringing a philosophy or an ideology into human society, books are a good idea. For instance, how many of you here have heard of Darwin's theory of evolution? By show of hands. If you didn't raise your hand, you don't get out much, I guess. It's there. You start reading any self-help book or anything else, and by chapter 2, at the very beginning, they say, when we were cavemen and collecting, always, and then it's like, I don't know. It just turns me off because it's such a speculation to start with. But they've, in any case, It's not their fault. They bought into it. Why? Because Darwin took the trouble to write a book. And his book called Origin of the Species, by the way, how many of you have it? It's out in the car, right? It's at home on your bedstand. If you ask any audience anywhere, nobody has it. It's very, very rare, but everybody knows the philosophy. Similarly, we find literatures that have changed the world in the United States of America, which used to be the colonies. There was a gentleman named Thomas Paine who wrote a book called Common Sense. Excellently written book. If you want to read good prose, read that book, or at least part of it. And he sold it in the colonies. To date, Guinness Book of World Records, it's been the top-selling book of all time per capita of any other book ever. And according to historians, the American Revolution was started when people were galvanized by reading that book. They read it and then they rose up because of the ideas in the book. When it's written down and when it's put into a cover, books are beloved in human society. Books are those things that cannot be denied. If somebody hands you a book and you're thinking, I don't want this, you still take it home. It's like, I can't throw it away. It's really hard to get rid of. You take it to the library and they'll sell it to somebody else and it just hangs around. I mean, very few people throw a book into the recycle bin because a book is something practically sacred to human beings. And there's proof. Economic systems, when it's been codified, it's been written down and bound into a book and it goes out into human society, gets taught in schools and so forth, then the ideas within the book are inculcated into human society because, again and again, people hear them and they take it seriously because somebody took the trouble to write it down. The authorized way in which the Srimad Bhagavatam is presented, it's got the original Sanskrit, word for word, and so forth. Yes, it's the most elevated of language and poetry, aesthetics, the ideas, and so forth. Can people qualify for it? Yes, Shukadeva Goswami says, Kirata hunandar pulinda pulkasha abhirashumba yavana kasadriya. Yene cha papa yada pashra yashraya shudyanti tasmai pravavishnave namaha. He says, any audience, and he starts naming people who, you know, Parikshit Maharaj might be familiar with that are way outside the Varnashram system even. And he says, even these people can become elevated to the topmost position by getting this knowledge that's coming through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the devotees. And so, yes, it has transformative power, and yes, books are a medium, the medium, through which most ideologies and philosophies are spread throughout the world. Is it important to have a next thing once people get the book? Absolutely. We have to have a habitat that the species can survive in. Every living entity develops a psychophysiological nature. And we have to accommodate that in order for them to survive. There was a project in California near where I live in order to revive the red-leg frog, who happened to be an important link in the ecological chain. And what did they do? They means scientists, apparently, who were funded by the government. They recreated the habitat in which the frog could survive. And lo and behold, the frog came back. Welcome back, red-legged frog, to your little home. And so in the same way, when we anticipate what people's needs are psychophysiologically, and we recreate an environment where Krishna consciousness is available, but it satisfies their basic needs so they can feel comfortable, then they'll come in, get association, and they'll naturally become devotees also. The precursor is the books, and also the books establish us as a bona fide organization. Otherwise, it would be hard to substantiate what we're doing if we didn't have, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, a mansion of books. And we have so many books that the intelligent people in our movement look at them and say, I can't read all those. And they stand as the emblem of our movement, which, by the way, is part of a sampradaya called the Sampradaya of the Book, which is why when you look at a picture, a rendering, an artistic rendering of Brahma, for instance, on the cover of the Brahma Samhita from the Gaudiya Math, where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had produced it, you'll find Brahma holding onto a book. I asked Rabindra Sarup, who wrote the foreword to my book called Our Family Business. It's a BBT book. And he said in his research he found that we are, our sampradaya is called the sampradaya of the book, which means that we pass knowledge down. That's our main thing that we do. Every great acharya in our line, if you look at the picture painted of the acharya or a photograph taken, you'll notice that each acharya is posing with
books.
It's our mainstay. And so we can be fully confident of the power of the book to penetrate society, to end up, boy, where do they end up anyway? I mean, just from our outing on Saturday, there was some penetration. There's kitchen tables right now as we speak where there's a conversation going on. Like, why did you buy that? And what is it anyway? It may take time for the roots to go down and the seeds in the book to spill out, but they will in due course of time. And that's what happens when you're a gardener. You plant, and then you also have to cultivate and wait. Thank you for such an insightful and important question. What do we have? Are we finished or over by 7 minutes, or we have 7 minutes left? Pardon me? Okay, well, just mention before I take your question that we inaugurated the next Bhadra Purnima, which is the day that is now marked on ISKCON calendars all over the world, ratified as a bona fide ISKCON event, because in the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami says, on Bhadra Purnima, the full moon day in the month of Bhadra, which is typically September, when you give away a set of Srimad Bhagavatams on a golden throne to someone else, then you get the gift of going to the supreme destination. And therefore, we found it, because we're always looking for any excuse for distributing books, that seemed like one of the best ones we'd ever heard in our lives. And not only that, it was Prabhupada's intention when he put his life and soul into writing the Bhagavatam, that they would be distributed widely, so much so that he wrote, I want that every respectable person has a set of Bhagavatams in his or her house. So that's a nice mission statement that we can reach up for. And therefore, here in this yatra, this glorious yatra, where everyone works together seamlessly and has a mood of going out and giving Krishna consciousness to others, the goal for this year, as ratified by the internal team of devotees, is to distribute at least 600 sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, Hari Bol. Last question. Is that on? No.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
When you put yourself out there in a speaking position or you put a book out or something, it's always pleasant to get the positive reviews, but especially in a place like the United States where tensions are high and people are very divided, how do you handle the inevitable negativity and criticism that comes your way as well? And how do you handle that as a person?
Well, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when you're rejected, then you get spiritual blood for your spiritual body. You know that kind of grinding feeling you get when people say, get out of here? Well, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Advaita Acharya, Haridas Thakur went door to door. And Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat says, people slam the door on Nityananda Prabhu. When we told Prabhupada that a lot of the books we were distributing, and back in those days, we made really sure that we got at least $5 per book, which was double the BBT cost at that time. And a lot of people just either left them or threw them away, and we told Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, people in Kali Yuga throw away their own babies. What do you expect? So what do you expect? People don't know. They've been inculcated with CNN and all kinds of information. So as a doctor goes out into the field, or a veterinarian, you know, you watch these little videos of veterinarians take care of the cat. And, you know, the cat goes crazy. The veterinarian goes, it's a cat. What do you expect? You know, he's going to bite you. So they wear gloves. So you have to prepare yourself, first of all, by understanding that it's work that the great souls do on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when you do it, you make advancement. And it's good to be chastised. If you can't find anybody here to chastise you, then go out. Because, you know, lots of people will tell you where to go. And it's really good for the soul, actually. You know, if you get in a position where everyone's afraid to tell you where to go, and that you're actually a little weird, and, you know, the way you did that was strange, you know, if you don't have a wife, then go out on Sankirtan. go out on Sankirtan and let people have at you. Because if you do that, then you get strong. I mean, how do you get strong in any discipline? You have to have sparring. I mean, people go to gyms to spar when they knew martial arts because, like, come on, hit me a little harder now, you know. Larry, you're holding back, you know, let me have it. And so, you know, we want that. That's why we go out, to get strong. And when you get knocked over, and especially you get something you can't handle, that's good because you come home super hungry. I'm never going to let that happen again. I'm going to be ready next time. And you know how it is when somebody, you know, throws something at you and you have the perfect reply? Or when somebody throws something at you and then you didn't have the perfect reply and that night you're falling asleep. It's like, ah, that's what I should have said, you know. Now you got it in your pocket, right? And the next time you go like, they say this and you say that, and everyone goes, wow, where'd you get that? So that's what you become when you're always in the public. It becomes part of your psyche. And also, not that just it's some technique and you're learning how to do something to sell something. It becomes part of your being because you get instant feedback from your environment. When you're nice to people, when your heart is open to the fact that I don't have to control people, I just have to pray to Krishna and be an instrument, then, you start to refine yourself in the way you deal with everybody all the time. So it's a high sadhana to have the opportunity to go out and teach Krishna consciousness to others. Okay, I hear bag crinkling, so it means we have we have wristbands that are specially empowered by Lord Yananda. If you wear these, I guarantee you, you'll distribute at least 100 sets of Bhagavatams individually. Or your money back from this wristband. And also, I encourage everyone to make a goal to distribute some Srimad Bhagavatam sets. And what could the goal be? Something more than zero and not less than one. And I promise you, if you write it down and say, I promise to write, to distribute at least one set of Bhagavatams, your life will change instantly. All the energy from learning Inanna will start entering into your mental system about how to do it. And then you'll say, one, I'm going to do 10. And then 10 turns into 23 and so forth. Okay, now I'm turning over to Divyanam Prabhu because I can't help myself. Prabhu, you can take his question over there.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhu. It was very, very good tips, Sankirtan tips. My question is, sometimes when we're on Sankirtan, and I wouldn't say we're discussing, and people sometimes, they want to know, but what they're utilizing, the sort of questions, is very much emotional. It's very much on the emotional platform. And even if you present very kind of a scientific or profound sort of a statement, they're just not ready to sit and somehow accept it. So how can we alter ourselves to present the philosophy in an appreciated way, and some of people can relate to it, something which is powerful for them?
Since you already know and are experienced in what their reaction is to the various answers, I find that it's best to have a clear goal when one's out on the street. You don't have to impart the whole philosophy to everybody, but if you make a heart-to-heart connection with people where they feel that they met somebody that cares about them, and you offer them spiritual gifts like books, prasadam, the holy name, your friendship, and so forth, and then there's a way that you can keep in touch. It's the best possible combination of things. You don't have to get it all, and you don't have to answer every single question. Interpret what they actually want and need, and that is they want feel that I met somebody who's actually spiritual. And so cater to that, and you'll always feel happy. And if people really want to ask a philosophical question on the street or anywhere else, which is pretty rare, that they want that detailed of answer or can handle it if they're brand new, then you can try to couch it in language that they can appreciate. Prabhupada used analogies. Analogies are worth 1,000 words. And if you have those always on the ready to tell people, for instance, about service and connection, probably gave the example of a little screw. And he said, if you find a screw on the ground, you'll know that it had its glory days somewhere. It fits in a machine. And when it was in the machine, then it was very glorious and powerful, and it was doing work that nobody else could do. But when it's out of the machine, then it's you can't sell it on eBay for two pence. So same with us. And the same with us kind of thing, if you give these types of examples, then people will get it right away. So collect those and try to make bridges for people so they can come in. That's what Prabhupada did.
Hare Krishna. Just a couple of very announcements. Just wanted to mention in relation to the point of the Bhagavatams and the goal. The children have set up a goal this year to distribute 108 Bhagavatam sets the manor. So that is a great inspiration for all of us to try and follow in their leads and hopefully do something from our side. So these wristbands are there. You can collect it from His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu as you leave the room. If you want to get empowerment from Mahaprabhu, wear them. And they say, assume it can be done. So we are already assuming we'll do the 600, if not more than 600 Bhagavatam sets this year, actually. And also, I hope you all got these cards of the four cushions. The book is about to come very soon. We had a seminar in New Mayapur on these cushions, and it was really, really nice, actually. So if you have any spare left, Sridham can collect the four cushions one, and Sachi can collect the Japa cards one. Please give it to them if you have any spare cards left, so we can give it out to the others. And finally, we want to thank His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu and Her Grace Nirakula Mataji, who have come all the way from ISKCON of Silicon Valley. And it's been a really nourishing time for us over the last 12, 13 days, including 6 days in France, where we went for a retreat. Every time they come, we are left with nothing but an inspiration and enthusiasm to dedicate ourselves more and more to this preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in the style of Bhaktivedanta manner, if we can please put our hands together and with three loud Hari Bols, thank them. Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
Gopremanande Nitai Gora Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gora Hari Bol. Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Nitai Gora Hari Bo. Vancha Kalpa the Rusha, Kripa Snabeva Chapa, Titanam, Pavadi Bio, Vaishnava Bio, Namo Namaha.